thing, you're fine. We'll move on to the next case, which is Donna Rhodes versus the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Yes, sir.
May it please the court, I'm Stephen Miner. I'm counsel to the plaintiff appellant Donna Rhodes in this matter. This matter was originally filed as a Title VII complaint in the district court under three counts: a discrimination count, a harassment count, and a retaliation account. The district court granted summary judgment on all three counts. In light of the brevity of the time that I have allotted, if it's okay with your honors, I'd like to start with count two, which is the sexual harassment account first, because I think that is the most significant. The district court conceded that Ms. Rhodes met the requirements under Hall versus Bodine of 1-3 and said that the only matter that the case fell short on with regard to count two was the basis for employer liability.
This is on hostile environment?
This is on sexual harassment, Your Honor.
Okay.
The court maintained that neither the lead worker nor the yard technician were in fact supervisors, and then went on to say that the issue was whether IDOT had notice under Durkin versus the City of Chicago. Your Honors need to understand a little bit of the dynamics of the yard, what is referred to as the yard.
Before you do that, I do have one factual question for you, and it's this. Other than the one pornographic picture that was taped to her locker, is there any evidence that she was exposed to pornography on other occasions and that she was disturbed by it?
Well, Your Honor, there is testimony in the record that pornographic jokes were placed on the bulletin board.
Yeah.
But she saw the bulletin board, and as Your Honor knows, the evidence also says...
magazine.
Well, no.
Was she shown those, or what were there overt acts?
Well, Your Honor, one of the most compelling things, while she did not view the pornographic tapes, the fact that this yard created a scenario where they had, in essence, like a wall safe, but if Your Honor knows, there was a TV that was hidden behind a picture that the men were viewing pornographic materials while some of the people were out driving on the road. While she didn't view those tapes, she knew those tapes were going on.
Why is that harassing her? I don't understand that.
Well, Your Honor, one of the points that I allege in our brief is I think a number of men watching pornographic tapes and then coming out when this woman comes back to the yard after driving a truck, being the only female in the yard, I think much of, as I referred to in the brief, the level of testosterone of the men at that point, Your Honor, is certainly vanguard.
What'd they do?
Well, I think the testimony, they were actually very nice to her in one sense, Your Honor, but I believe...
Well, did they come out of these porno flicks and then start harassing her or doing something?
She was not touched. In fact, the general population, the men, in fact, were very nice to her. The primary concern and the attacks really were formulated by what was referred to as the lead worker, which was, in my opinion, which is why I asked to address the second argument, her supervisor. Even though the district court has maintained that
What did the lead person do? How did he harass her?
Well, several things, Your Honor. One, and it's documented in the record that many people, she was referred to as a cunt. She was referred to as a...
Was that done in her presence, or was...
She testified, she overheard, as she was walking out of a room, she overheard him say that. He made comments to the men. The lead one... If I may just backtrack and then answer Your Honor's question, the dynamics of the yard are that there is one person is in charge of the entire yard. He's referred to as the yard technician. He's responsible for the men and the equipment. Then there's the lead worker who is responsible to the men and who reports to the yard technician. In his deposition, Your Honors need to note that the lead worker referred to himself as the supervisor. Then groups of people go out and cruise, and they have a lead. They are responsible to a lead worker. One of the things, Your Honor, in getting back to your question, that the lead worker did with regard to Ms. Rhodes was, one, he changed her route. She applied. She asked to get her route back. She was not allowed to get her route back. There is testimony.
Well, I guess she got a shorter route. Why did she have anything to complain about?
Your Honor, for a number of reasons. One, she was a snowbird, so she was not a full-time highway maintainer. She was only a part-time employee and a seasonal employee. Mr. Rollinson, who was the union representative, testified as the significance of getting, while she got a different route and it was shorter, the significance of that, Your Honor, is that she was familiar with her own route, knowing the curbs, the sewers, and the layout of her own route, and that was very significant, even though the district court found that was not, in its opinion, significant. Mr. Rollinson also testified, or I believe it was Mr. Caruso, who was the yard mechanic, who knew of the change, that he never knew of another person who ever asked to get their route back and was not given their route back. I think that's also significant. I think there's a number of small, isolated incidents which permeate this case, which show that in fact she was discriminated against and was harassed. She was the only female employee in the yard. She was the first person ever to come to the yard. Subsequently, in her third year, another woman was hired. Going back though to the dynamics, as I indicated, the district court concluded that they were not, that the lead worker and the yard technician were not supervisors. Your Honor indicated in a case called in Parkins versus Civil Constructors that a supervisor merely needs to be someone who affects the terms and conditions of someone's employment. I would represent to Your Honors that, in fact, the lead worker and the yard technicians are, in fact, supervisors. They're not merely co-employees. If Your Honors conclude...
In Parkins, I think that's what we determined, wasn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
They were co-workers.
I agree, but what my point is, though, in Parkins, what you defined a supervisor as someone who affected the terms and conditions of someone's employment. And then you went on, you used the definition in terms of hiring, firing, or implying imposing discipline. What I've asked Your Honors to consider doing...
Those are the adverse actions.
Correct. What I've asked Your Honors to consider doing in this case is to expand that definition, because if you look at the circumstances of this case, you have to conclude that the yard technician and the lead worker were supervisors.
Yes, but I'm not sure why they harassed him. Why was the harassment at their hands? It was the supervisor wasn't harassing her, as far as I can make out.
Well, if you conclude that the lead worker is a supervisor, then Your Honor would conclude that, in fact, he was harassing her.
Why?
You're talking about harassment as shortening her route, for example?
I'm talking about shortening her route. I'm talking about when the person on the crew that she was assigned to, which is referred to as the lead worker, when the lead worker stepped forward to in fact say that in fact Ms. Rhodes was a good employee, he had no problems with his route, he was accused by the lead worker publicly of having an affair with Mrs. Rhodes, which the workers knew was absolutely not true. I'm saying, Your Honor, that all of the circumstances that happened to Ms. Rhodes amount to a form of harassment as well as retaliation. Not
what are they retaliating against?
Well, Your Honor, for example, the third part of my argument dealing with retaliation shows the one aspect of where Ms. Rhodes talked to the lead worker and indicated to him that the next day, which was the last day that they were providing the highway maintainer's license, because her goal was to become a full-time IDOT employee. She reported to the lead worker that the next morning she was going to come in late because she was going to take the test. She was dismissed from her action as a result of not following...
And what protected activity was she engaged in as to which this was retaliation? To retaliate, you got to have protected activity in the first place.
In order to be a full-time highway maintainer, you must take this exam that's provided by the state, and it's only provided at a particular time. If the next day that was her next day to take the exam was the only time she could have taken that exam, pursuant to the policy, which is a union policy, but for which she's not a union member, but IDOT adopted that policy. The plain language of that policy maintains that all an employee needs to do is notify the lead worker of their intent to come in late, and the lead worker needs to consult with the yard technician, and a decision needs to be made. Ms. Rhodes followed that policy and was marked AWOL because she allegedly did not talk with the yard technician.
He told her to, didn't he?
I was going to say,
this acting lead worker said, okay, but you got to tell so-and-so, and she didn't.
I was just going to make that point, Your Honor. It is unquestioned that he suggested to her to call Mr. Mira, the yard technician, and indicate that she was going to be late. She did not do that. Your Honor, the policy that they hang their hat on still maintains she followed the policy. Their statement in the record that Your Honors will read from Mr. Rawlinson, who was the union representative, but because she was not a union employee, she had no representative to go to. Mr. Rawlinson testified that he knew of only one other occasion where a man followed the same procedure and was treated differently. He was allowed to sign in the next day and was not, or the same time, and not marked AWOL. And what I'm asking Your Honors to consider doing is to consider expanding the notion of a supervisor under the circumstances of this case.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. My name is John Schmidt. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the State of Illinois, and I represent the State Department of Transportation. And I also, since Mr. Miner started with the sexual harassment claim, which is based on an alleged hostile work environment, I'll start there as well. And the problem that the district court found, and we believe the district court was correct, was that there was no basis for employer liability.
Well, if, as the briefs indicate, Mr. Mara was periodically throwing away the pornographic magazines that he was finding on the site, why wouldn't that alone be sufficient to establish that IDOT had notice of the problem with pornography at the yard?
Because Mr. Mara also was not a supervisor for Title VII purposes. He did not have authority to hire, fire, promote, demote, transfer, or discipline.
You know, you're going into a very interesting area, Mr. Schmidt, because Ms. Rose made the point in her brief that if neither the yard technician nor the lead worker qualify as supervisors, then what we have here is a yard with 30 to 50 employees and thousands of dollars, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment on the premises, but no one on the site who is responsible for identifying and rectifying acts of discrimination. If we treat this as a site without a supervisor, in effect, wouldn't we be giving employers an incentive to insulate themselves from liability by putting what Ms. Rhodes calls pseudo-supervisors in charge of work sites who appear to be running things, but who can't be treated as supervisors for purposes of Title VII liability? I'm having a problem with that.
I don't think you would be encouraging employers to do that. There were people in an IDOT District 1 office a few miles from the Arlington Heights site who would certainly be considered supervisors. And one of them, Mr. Ayling, his deposition testimony is in the record. When there was a complaint made, when Ms. Rose accused Mr. Palladian of threatening him at one point, after she complained about her snow route transfer, Mr. Ayling came onto that work site to investigate, and then Ms. Rose backed off. So there were people, they may have been off site, but there were people, there were IDOT supervisors who were supervisors for Title VII who were responsible. They may have been off site, but there were people whom Ms. Rhodes could have gone to. She not only could have gone to somebody like Mr. Ayling, but she also, the record reveals very clearly that IDOT had two civil rights officers who would go to the site every year and inform employees not to engage in certain types of behavior, that this type of behavior constitutes sex discrimination, this constitutes sexual harassment. And the civil rights officers told the employees, if something like this is going on, you can tell us. Here is our phone number.
Whom did she complain to on the issue of the, I guess some picture was taped to her locker or something?
She complained to Mr. Palladian and Mr. Mara about that, and immediately a meeting was called. And
well, were they considered supervisors?
No, well,
who did they report to? Who investigated it?
Mr. Palladian and Mr. Mara did, and they called the meeting and told the people to knock it off. And, Your Honor, I think this does bring up a point. I believe Mr. Palladian did identify himself as a supervisor in the record. He did have some authority over these employees. He certainly did. Mr. Mara did, too. But I think the case law in this area, cases like Hall and Parkins, make the point that having authority over employees is not enough. In other words, you can be a supervisor for some purposes, but not a supervisor for Title VII purposes. To be a supervisor for Title VII purposes, the person must have the authority to make one of these fundamental types of decision: hiring, firing, demoting, disciplining, and so on.
Mike testified that he picked up these magazines whenever he'd find them.
Yes, he said he would pick them up and discard them.
Is there anything in the record about Ms. Rhodes complaining that she encountered these magazines or found them to be create a hostile environment?
No, the record reveals the opposite, that she never made any such complaints, and I believe she admitted that in her summary, in her response to the department statement of facts on summary judgment. She never made any complaints about the pornographic magazines that were in the yard or the pornographic videos that were shown. And as Your Honors pointed out, the videos were not shown in her presence. The magazines were not shown directly to her. The record, for purposes of summary judgment, the record would reveal that she probably saw the magazine, and I believe Mr. Minor referred to the bulletin board that she would have seen that, but it was not like...
Who finally discovered the hidden VCR or whatever it was?
According to the record, that was removed in 1999, and then the IBAT higher-up really only found out about that when Ms. Rhodes filed her complaint in 2002. They went to the yard, and it was long gone by then. There was a TV, or there was a hole in the wall, basically, where the TV had been. So that was, and again, with regard to the TV, the employees were taking active steps to conceal it. It was behind a picture frame, and they were, apparently, they even had a lookout to make sure that higher-ups weren't around when the videos were being shown.
Our tax dollars that were...
Unfortunately, Your Honor, yes. And,
we don't know snow days.
I'm not sure whether it was really on no snow or possibly on snow days after people came in, too. And this is... All I'll say along these lines is that this is not something that the department was very pleased to find out that its employees were doing. But we, as to the sexual harassment claim, I'll emphasize that it is a couple of cases from this court, cases like Cook and Durkin, have recognized that if the employer does have training with regard to sexual harassment, which the department had, and it does set forth procedures for reporting sexual harassment, then it is incumbent upon the employee to actually report the sexual harassment, which was not done here. The department was not given notice that this activity that this conduct was going on. And in the Durkin case, there were some very offensive things alleged to be going on in that case, but the fact that the employee did not report them was considered very significant there, and I believe it is also very significant here. Another point I would make in regard to the retaliation claim that has been raised, Mr. Minor focused on Mr. Rawlinson's testimony with regard to the one day in which Ms. Rhodes was marked absent. Mr. Rawlinson testified that he knew of a situation where a male employee was not marked absent under similar circumstances, but his testimony in that regard was hearsay. He testified when he was asked how he had found this out, he testified, well, the person told me, and that would have been hearsay testimony that would not be admissible, so it should not be considered, and I do not believe it was considered by Judge Castillo in making his decision.
Do you know, Mr. Schmidt, I do have one question for you. Both you and the district court said that Ms. Rhodes was required under IDOC's policy to notify the lead worker of her late arrival. But the written policy itself just says the lead worker.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I apologize if my brief was mistaken on that. Your Honor is correct. The policy says lead worker.
And she spoke to the lead worker.
She spoke to the lead worker, but the policy says that even if you speak to the lead worker, the technician still has discretion on whether to mark the person absent or not. The lead worker in this case was Mr. Morrison, and Mr. Morrison mistakenly said, I don't have, well, he correctly said he didn't have the authority to grant the time off, but then he said, you have to speak to Mr. Mara, the technician, yourself. Call him yourself. She didn't do that, so Mr. Mara never found out about this, and so she was, as a result, marked absent. But another thing I'll point out is that, you know, the record reveals Ms. Rhodes was planning to take this test on April 15th. This seems like something, too, that could have been arranged well ahead of time. It wasn't a sudden illness or something like that. It was a test that she had been planning on taking.
She took the test, I presume.
Yes, she took the test, and I believe
she was also offered a job, wasn't she?
Yes, she was successful on the test, and she was invited back for the next year, but she chose not to return to the department.
Okay, thanks. Your time, I believe, has expired. Is that correct?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
So the case will be taken under advisement.